You're listening to The Zen Courses Show, episode 17. Fun fact about the number 17, that is 2 degrees higher than the temperature in Chicago this morning. So if anyone out in Southern California or Southern Spain wants to invite me to come stay for a while, I'm totally up for that. Let's do it. Welcome to The Zen Courses Show, the show for online course creators who care about building actionable, meaningful, and profitable online courses. If you're a solo entrepreneur, tech geek, or creative, The Zen Courses Show is the place to get expert advice for creating your online course, overcoming overwhelm, and growing a balanced business. To get the full experience, sign up at zencourses.co, where you'll get access to free lessons, resources, and more. Again, that's zencourses.co. Hey everyone, just wanted to give you a quick intro before we jump into today's episode. In this episode, I'm interviewing Carmen Spaniola. Carmen is an amazing entrepreneur with a great story, including how she bounced back from business failure to become a successful online entrepreneur. But I also want to give you a heads up. There is a swear word in this episode, and it's kind of a juicy one. I am not a fan of censoring my guests. I like them to be themselves. So if you're not a fan of swear words, or if you're in a public place, or if you're at work, you might want to turn the volume down around the 8-minute mark. Okay, let's get into it. What's up, everyone? Thanks for tuning into the Zen Courses Show. Today, I am honored to chat with the illustrious Carmen Spaniola. Carmen is an entrepreneur, intuitive coach, clinical hypnotherapist, and the creator of two online programs, the Numinous School and the True Prosperity Program. In her work, she helps spiritually inclined people infuse their lives and work with more soul. Carmen, welcome to the Zen Courses Show.
Wow, thanks so much for having me.
So is there anything you want to add to that intro? Can you tell us a bit more about yourself and the work you do?
Oh, goodness. Actually, as you were saying it, I was like, I really need to edit that down. It's just so long. Yeah, it's full. It's full. I'm a multi-potentialite with all of those things. I've always been a very passionate entrepreneur. I've tried to fire every boss I've ever had. And at the same time, I've always had a highly developed spiritual yearning. And so I just kind of made myself into my job, basically.
Okay. So what does it mean to infuse your life and work with more soul?
Well, I think a lot of the business and even personal development work these days gives us lots of tools for the kind of the tasks and activities, addressing like the physical level of productivity, and then the emotional and mental level of, you know, how to be, say, a great leader or how to communicate in business. And I think those are really useful and foundational. But at the same time, we're missing the fourth quadrant, which is the spiritual dimension. And most entrepreneurs that I know are highly intuitive, and intuition just expresses itself in a lot of different ways. So physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual intuition are all just different flavors, different modes, you might say. And so when we aren't using our spiritual intuition and our kind of sense of connection with something greater than ourselves, then we're actually narrowing the range of perception that we could be applying to decision making. So, you know, I think that infusing your business and your life with more soul means having tools and processes, another way of saying rituals and ceremonies, that will actually connect you with that felt sense of what your soul feels like when it's speaking to you. I think that's really important. Otherwise, no matter what achievement, no matter what milestone, no matter how much money, no matter how many accolades, you'll always have that sense that either something's missing or you're not quite hitting the mark.
Yeah, so it sets the foundation. Mm-hmm. I love that. Okay, so, and this is going to be a little bit of a tangent, but before we got started, we were talking about our mutual friend, Sarah Selecki.
Yes.
And Sarah is, when I interviewed her, there's tons of information about her location. So I said, Sarah, where in the world are you? Which made me think about where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? And then she told me about you, Carmen Spaniola. So where are you calling? Where are we speaking to you from, Carmen? Where are you?
I am in basically the California of Canada. So I'm in a town called Victoria, and it's on an island called Vancouver Island. It's the very, very, very west coast of the southern part of Canada. But we have internalized American colonialism, so we call ourselves often the Pacific Northwest, even though we're in the southwest of Canada. So I would say I'm half a day's trip from Seattle. Little north.
Okay. Okay. That puts in the context for the US listeners. Great.
Yeah.
So let's have some fun and help people get to know you a bit. I've got five quick questions for you. Are you ready for this?
Absolutely.
Okay. Early bird or night owl?
Oh, total night owl.
What is one thing you do each morning to start your day off right?
Well, I don't rush it. So I don't schedule things. Aside from this, this was quite special because of other things happening today, but I don't schedule anything before 11. So that pretty much sets the tone for my day, hence the night owl thing.
I totally understand. I'm the same way. So third question, what is your favorite quote and why?
Oh, right now, my favorite quote is from Tolkien, and it's, "The praise of the praiseworthy is beyond all reward." And that's just stuck with me for the past couple years, actually, because it ties into my courses. When I launched the Numinous School, I started getting feedback and testimonials and accolades from people that I considered the most highly intelligent people in my circle. And since my course is about intuition, it just was so incredibly validating to have these, you know, highly mentally alert and rigorous thinkers giving me this feedback. And that was just really, that kind of just made the whole thing worthwhile. So so now it just helps me stay focused on not really caring so much about what most people think. and sort of like, here's the mirror that I'm using these people to help me gauge, like, how is my work right now? So yeah, the praise of the praiseworthy is beyond all reward.
I love that. Okay. So I know from reading about you, your plans for becoming an old curmudgeon who swears a lot. So I've got a special question for you. What is your favorite swear word?
I don't know if it's my favorite, but the one that comes out when I'm like really in a moment of spontaneity is motherfucker. And the reason why I think that's great is like, I'm a mom and I'm like, I'm highly fuckable. So I'm like, motherfucker is actually like an awesome thing. So I think there's space for that in my lexicon for sure.
Okay. So that's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. Okay. So let's bring it back. Last question. I know you just recently celebrated a birthday. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
So what has been your biggest aha or just the most pivotal moment as an entrepreneur?
As an entrepreneur? Oh, well, the most pivotal moment was when my first large business, I had a retail operation, and it was it was highly successful, got quite a lot of PR and press, and it was high-end, sustainable, and green furnishings, and it got washed away in a period of about 4 months in 2008. Well, actually, 2009 was when I actually closed it. And I had personally guaranteed all my loans. So I went through a bankruptcy that was absolutely devastating and really precipitated a long, dark night of the soul for me, just really grappling with shame and guilt and failure, you know, the worst kind of failure, depression. It was really awful. And as an entrepreneur, you always hear people say like, oh, Richard Branson, he's, you know, gone bankrupt. You know, most millionaires go bankrupt multiple times. But I really feel like that's a dangerous mythology, because I don't think we should be giving ourselves permission to to cost that much to our fellow citizens. You know, bankruptcy is a big deal and there's a cascading effect of impact. And so I don't like that narrative anymore. And it really got me quite clear about how important it was to not listen to the market necessarily, not be as oriented towards what I could do. It was like, should I do that? Is that in alignment with my soul? Is it good for me to grow right now? Or would that be risking too much for my family? That sort of thing. I just got way more realistic and less self-aggrandizing, I would say. And it definitely was an encounter with my soul. And so that's definitely been the most pivotal thing. I can't fake that there's not a spiritual dimension to my work in the world anymore. There definitely is.
That's a great story. So, and it touches on my next question, which is how you came to be an entrepreneur. But now I'm intrigued. How did you come to be an online entrepreneur? Where did the journey after the bankruptcy and you went through the dark moments and came out of that? How did you get here?
Well, it was funny because when I had my store, I have to say, like 2007, Facebook, the internet, all of that they weren't even really teaching that in entrepreneurship courses that much. Like, you had to have a website, but the social aspect wasn't really, it was harder to get information about that. And it wasn't as pervasive. And so I had a newsletter list and I would write things in my newsletter that were very impassioned and quite a personal, maybe even almost political take on why climate change as an issue was so important, et cetera, even though everything was very, it was kind of like my brand was if you could blend Apple and Martha Stewart and mid-century modern, that was kind of my take on green. And what I found was all these people would come to my store and my staff would always say, you know, it's more like they come here to listen to you talk. And so if only we could record the conversation you just had with that customer or that sort of thing. So I kind of was inspired by this real, again, soulful connection I was having with people and wanting to share those conversations that were happening in my store with more people. So then, of course, everything got washed away and dissolved, and I really struggled to get back on my feet. I went back into sales. I'd worked for many years in the wine and spirits industry, and on the side, I'd been having this spiritual awakening, this breakthrough, where my intuition just completely opened up. And so I started to cultivate it and I was working with people and it needed to be quite quiet. So I had this website that had very little information about me. It was hard to contact, but you could book a session. And I started doing sessions over Skype. And so it was pretty advanced for the intuitive sort of realm industry. And it was partly because I'd still internalized that social scorn that comes from being intuitive. And I had this sort of day job. So I wanted to keep my lives quite separate and quite private. But what happened was that became quite huge because the same passion and very strong point of view that I had when I was writing newsletters in my store, I was putting on my site and I was putting in newsletters to my clients. And so they became my champions. And I very quickly created this community in, you know, multiple time zones in Europe and even in the Middle East, you know, just all over the place. So it was kind of a coping mechanism for a long time. And also that embarrassment that I still felt the social scorn of, you know, that being intuitive was flaky, you know, that you couldn't really take that seriously, that you wouldn't be taken seriously as an entrepreneur, that sort of thing. But then it started paying my bills. So that got my attention.
Yeah. It usually does.
Yeah.
Nice. So that's a huge story. And I know you condensed a lot there.
I did, yeah.
When you were speaking, the first thing that came to mind was just, wow, the power of listening. Because you said how when you had your store, your employees would say, they're coming to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And just going with that guidance. And then you also talked about, I love how you said that your spiritual awakening was something that was happening on the side.
Yeah.
So I guess where I'm going with this is, how did you manage to stay focused on, you know, like what got you through to stay with that? Because there are a lot of people listening who have something else that's going on. Maybe they're dealing with a lot of things in their life and they're working on something on the side that they feel intuitively is what they should be doing. How did you continue forward, even though you said you felt like no one's going to take me seriously, no one's going to, you know, this is kind of woo-woo, which is the word that I hear a lot. How did you continue on?
Well, fortunately for me, I worked for a company owned by a guy who was a huge dick. Like, he was just such an asshole. And so going to work was incredibly painful for me. And his lack of design aesthetic, his poor communication, the materials, the marketing department would put out, so I was on the sales team and I created a style sheet and brand standards for the company and gave it to the marketing people. It was like, okay, look, you just don't bold, red, and italic ever choose one emphatic element and leave it at that. Like, I just couldn't handle it. Just the aesthetic, the creative in me couldn't manage anymore. It was just making me crazy. And again, my soul gave me all these opportunities for me to just feel that constant grating dissatisfaction with doing frivolous work, you know? I just wanted to be able to lay my head on the pillow and say, like, okay, I really connected either with someone else or with, you know, something greater than myself today. And so I just got really focused on, I need to create a sustainable business that isn't going to stress out my family, that isn't going to just be a whim. I'm not going to put myself through that kind of financial hardship anymore. So then I was able to have a shift and realize, okay, so this is my bridge job. Basically, this guy is going to pay me to work on my business on the side. And that really helped. So it took about a year. And of course, in that time, I also knew that I needed to become more visible. So I did start, you know, I let people know on my Facebook, this is what I was doing. I let my manager know I have this other thing. So I wasn't being duplicitous anymore. And that really opened up a lot of my personal energy. I could be a lot more creative when I wasn't in that cognitive dissonance of, I want to be out in the world, but I also have to keep this hush hush. So I just started to become more and more transparent, took little steps. And then I set a goal that I wanted to take my family to Europe before I completely quit my job, because I knew that if I quit my job and was the main breadwinner and an entrepreneur, that we would never feel secure enough to be like, okay, we're going to Europe for 2 months. So I really started to reach out to all those early clients who had been my champions and say, I'm thinking of coming to Sweden and Finland and France. And if I did some workshops, how would that go? Would you be able to help me? Would you be interested? And they were completely keen. And so I was able to set up these workshops in Europe, and I actually made a ton of money. And then all of these people said, I would love to share this with other friends. When are you coming back? And I was like, I don't see myself taking 2 months to come to Europe with my family again soon, but what if I make it as a course? And so that's when I started to, and it was interesting because I knew about having multiple income streams and, you know, maybe having information products, but nothing ever really stirred me. And so it wasn't until I had that felt sense of desire from my people, you know, from my community over there that I was like, okay, now I feel inspired. I'm kind of an artist that way. It's like, I have to feel it to do it. And if I don't feel it, I just, no matter how strategic or smart it might be, I know I'm never going to be able to complete that task. It'll be like pushing a string. I won't be able to do it. So, so I took my cue intuitively from that heart-centered place of like, yeah, this is who I'm serving and it's time for me to do it. So yeah. So my first course came, a year and a half or so. It took me a while to get it done. But after I'd been completely supporting my family just through my business.
So that was a great answer because you went and answered my next question, which was when and why did you decide to start creating courses as part of your business model? So first let's get some timelines here. So when is this? When did you start to create your first course?
So the Numinous School is my first course, and I guess I launched that in, I guess it was early 2014.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. And what were your biggest challenges when you started out creating that course?
Oh my God, I had so much information. Like I just had so much knowledge and practical experience and information by then. And I was already starting to develop, I have a theory of intuitive profiles. It's kind of like Myers-Briggs, but for intuition. And so that was just, I was already leaving the kind of here's basic intuition and intellectually going off onto this much greater sort of unified theory of intuition. So I thought, oh my gosh, I have to capture this, all this basic information. And it was so much. And so I started to, I lead retreats and frequently in my retreats, there's quite a wide range of experience. You know, how experienced are people on the spiritual path? Well, you know, some people who come are in their 20s, some are in their 60s, some it's their first time. Sometimes they're like, they do it every year to go on retreat. There's this one woman who'd really never done anything like this before because she'd been working as an administrator, basically a train the trainer kind of person, working in workplace education in a very large regional health authority. And so she, after the retreat, said to me, this needs to be a course. And I was like, well, I actually have a course that I'm trying to make. It's just, it's really hard. It's kind of unwieldy. And she's like, oh, well, I can show you how you teach people. I know this is a great process, this great theory for adult learning. And she gave me basically the magic skeleton key for how to organize information in ways that people can actually learn. And now, so I've been using it for the last, year and a half, or maybe it's almost 2 years now.
Okay.
And that's just completely transformed everything, not just my courses, but how I lead live events and all of that stuff.
Yeah, I know you mentioned that over email when we were chatting, and I definitely want to dig into that. But first, I want to talk about, because your second course is the True Prosperity Program. Mm-hmm. And that is the one that I really wanted to dig into. First, can you tell us about the course? What is it about?
Okay, so the True Prosperity Program is a course for anybody who's experienced money trauma. So yeah. Like, ding, ding, hello. I have a bit of experience in this area. I recognize that trauma is a relative term. So you don't have to have had bankruptcy to have money trauma. You know, it can be, for some people, maybe they just have this sort of constant low-grade trust issue around money, you know, and so, or maybe you hear in the new age, you know, they call it lack consciousness or poverty mentality, whatever. I hate that stuff. Yeah. But basically they have trust issues with money, and it may be stuff that's come in from very early in their childhood. And as a hypnotherapist, you know, I spend a lot of time with people on what are those early messages that come in kind of before we're 8 years old. And so it shows up in anxiety. You can call it a lot of things, but basically it's anxiety. So the True Prosperity Program helps eliminate anxiety around money. So it's easier then for you to improve your finances. And so we take this really holistic approach. So it's 4 weeks, the first week, we address sort of physical dimensions of your relationship with money. And then the next week is emotional dimension. The third week is mental. And the last week is spiritual. So by the end of it, either your money situation, your actual finances, whatever your stuck point was, will either be resolved or improved, or at least you won't be stressed about it anymore. So yeah, I use a whole bunch of techniques, but of course, as a hypnotherapist, all of my work is underpinned with getting into altered, more receptive states of consciousness. So you don't just have a conscious or mental level understanding of what you need to do. You actually have a felt sense and a deeper shift inside.
Right. And who's the ideal learner for this course? Who's it for?
Well, I would say the True Prosperity Program in particular is for people who recognize that no amount of, like, I actually just did a talk with people who've been doing the Smart Cookies program. I don't know if you know that, but it's like a book or something that came out, and you can have these, like, it's like a money book club, I guess. But anyway, so they've been in this program for like 3 years meeting, and they're like, yeah, it takes a couple of years to sort of change your finances. And I didn't say anything, but in my mind, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, you know, if it takes more than 3 months, like I'm out. Like I want this to go deep and quick. So it really is for people who recognize that even though they have all the information or whatever, there's fear for them around money. And when you're in fear, everything's contracted. It's very, no matter how many affirmations you tell yourself, you know, you are not going to be able to just put a happy face sticker on that empty tank of gas and make your car go. Like, you have to actually move deeper than just your conscious understanding of like, oh, I had a bankruptcy, I just have to get over it now. It's like, no, there's mental and emotional issues that are keeping you entrenched in fear. So you can't just go out and like be productive. You can't just, you know, easily take advantage of opportunities or do risk assessments accurately as an entrepreneur if you are in this place of fear. So it's really for people who are interested in that. I don't do financial planning. We're not doing budgeting. It's none of that stuff. It's really about money as a symbol, because money isn't, yeah. You know, it's a symbol, and that's how your subconscious understands, is through symbol and imagery. So money is just a stand-in for what it means to you. So we explore all the different levels of what money means to you, and we shift it while you're in that relaxed, focused state of concentration.
The reason that I wanted to talk about this course is because I know everyone, you know, everyone has some emotional connection and story with money. Mm-hmm. But particularly, I think that it's helpful for entrepreneurs to begin to unravel a lot of that trauma that you talk about and the fear. And so I want to come back to that emotional part and dig into that later, because I just think it's so important to address that. So before we do that, let's talk about, you talked about the course structure. So I think you said it's 4 weeks. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And is it a self-paced course?
Actually, it is slightly drip feed, because you really practice the first week first. And then on day 8, the second lesson opens. And then day 15, the third one opens. So you are paced through it, because it does take a month to change behavior.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when did you launch this course? I know you said the Nimbus School was 2014. So when did this one launch?
The Numinous School. Yeah, the Numinous School was a while ago. And the True Prosperity Program just launched in October.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Relatively new. Okay. So what did you learn from launching the Numinous School? How was your experience launching the True Prosperity Program? And, you know, what did you learn, and how did you apply that to your process?
Well, so when I launched the Numinous School, I was quite oriented towards, I mean, by the time I got through figuring out how to organize the structure, I was really oriented towards like making the design super beautiful. I really wanted to have a course that was completely self-paced, where you got access to it right up front, all the content. I did it on WordPress with a bunch of plugins. I worked with the designer. It's like very pretty, pretty. So the marketing of it was quite easy. I was talking about it for quite a long time in my social media, et cetera. Whereas the True Prosperity Program, I really feel like this is my best work. And so I was like, okay, I want to be more careful about this, because you do need to follow this process. And it's the way I describe it is, it's like baking a cake. This kind of content is like, you can't just take flour and baking soda and sugar and eggs and milk and just whack it all together and throw it in the oven and be like, ta-da, cake. You have to measure precisely. You have to add certain things with a certain kind of vigor to your mixing. You have to be gentle. And that's really what this course is it's sort of a beautiful blend of the intuitive and the rigorously intellectual. You have to understand the concepts and then apply them. So I didn't focus nearly as much on marketing, because even though I've done this as a live workshop, like a live program several times, I really wanted to kind of have more of a soft launch and observe how people were engaging, how they were doing, see what kind of feedback I was getting before I really started to launch big. And so with the Numina School, it's more like, okay, I'm going to launch it and just kind of let it be. I'm going to make all my money kind of front end loaded, and then it'll just kind of, you know, go long tail, and then I'll relaunch it later. Whereas this program, the True Prosperity Program, is kind of like this discrete world of work I've created. And so I was like, this is going to be more like the turtle or the tortoise that's just going to chug along, and I'm going to keep tweaking and refining as I go. At this point, I haven't actually refined anything. All of the content and the delivery is just like fantastic, but I was using a new platform as well, so I didn't want to launch really huge just in case I needed to switch the platform. So I'm beta testing this platform, because I think I'm going to move the Numina School over to it and relaunch the Numina School in January.
So there's some questions there. The first one is, what was the reason you decided to use a platform as opposed to doing the WordPress plugin route?
Well, there's a couple of things. With WordPress plugins, kind of when one thing updates, if it screws, if it makes anything else buggy, if it's not compatible anymore, there's far less documentation and support for these kinds of plugins than there would be if everything was just contained in one platform. That was my sense. Yeah. The other two things I really wanted were promo codes, which is like ridiculously hard to find a membership plugin that includes payment gateway with promo codes. But I really wanted to do that because I'm frequently presenting to really different groups, and I want to kind of be able to give them their own little bonus or code or whatever. So I really wanted that. And then the other thing is, I don't want to have to send people away to a social media platform to be able to weigh in and say, oh my God, that exercise just gave me the hugest epiphany. So I really wanted comments to be right in the lesson and have people be able to track their progress, which all of those components, creating that on WordPress was just, there were a lot of things I just didn't do because it was so finicky. So now having it in one platform, I'm really, really enjoying it.
Yeah, this is so great because I think for a long time, everyone assumed that WordPress was the only way. And we've been seeing this, I don't want to say this surge, but there's a lot of platforms out there now that people can use to put their course content on. What are you using?
Well, now I'm using Teachery.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although when I first started testing, I was using Rizuku, but it was sort of interesting because it was sort of like, made me feel like Rizuku is kind of like for PC and Teachery is Mac aesthetic. Like, and I was like, I just like this aesthetic. Design's really important to me and simplicity. So even though I would say Teachery, the support has been kind of 50-50, and there's been a couple things that are a bit glitchy. If you're an international user with the payment gateway default to American dollars and just little things like that. But oh my God, is it the best value on the market right now?
Yeah,
it really is. I mean, even though the prices actually just went up, I did a lot of research and comparison. It's like, wow, this is, maybe slightly less robust, but talk about a massive value that you're getting with that platform.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a plug, because I interviewed Jason Zook, who's a co-founder of Teachery, and I think they just eliminated fees. So I'm glad that you can share your experience for anyone who may be intrigued about Teachery.
Yeah, I'm quite a fan now. And I think, you know, I'm frequently sending them little notes. Hey, Gerlando, you know, how do I do this? But they've been pretty good about getting back and fixing little glitchy things. And so far, in terms of actually launching the course, it's been completely smooth. Like, the user experience has been really good. My students are really loving it. And they're commenting with the Discuss interface that they have there. So again, you don't really need a Facebook group, which okay. I like. Yeah.
All right. So we mentioned this earlier, we chatted over email and you said you had this very simple and transformational course development process. So let's dig into that now. Can you talk us or walk us through your process for course development?
Absolutely. And I'm going to tell you right now, your listeners are getting like the best deal right now, because this in itself it is a whole course. So this is, I find, magic. It's magic in particular for type A creatives. So yeah. People who are like, I have so much content. So it's really three parts. There's three parts to organizing your information and teaching adult learners especially when it's something where, like, most of us are in motion. So we need to be able to learn in motion, because, you know, we're creating the course, we're working with clients, we're marketing, we're doing all the different facets of running our business. So most of us aren't just going to take, you know, 2 months out to only focus on this one project, right? So. Yeah. Here's how you just kind of streamline and make fewer decisions by just focusing the information. So there's three parts. Number one is the really magic, simple question, which is, what does your niche need to know and do in order to achieve the outcome that you want? So in other words, who needs to do what, and what do you want them to do? What do they need to know to do this? But you just really focus it. So for instance, I would say, what does a person who sustained severe money trauma need to know and do in order to welcome abundance into their life? That would be my guiding question. The concepts that you share with them are, they you only want to give them the stuff that will help them do the things you want them to do. So the only stuff they need to know are the concepts that support the do's. No more, no less. It's very easy for people to want to get off onto like big theoretical things, but if it doesn't help them do something, then forget it. That's a blog post. That's a podcast. That's whatever.
Yeah.
That doesn't go in the course. So once you've decided, okay, this is the niche, this is what I want them to achieve, then you have to figure out, well, how do I know how important this concept is? Like, they kind of need to know it to do this, or at least to do it well. So the second piece is, you assign a critical impact rating to everything you're thinking of sharing. So let's say you have a scale from 1 to 10, and 1 is, okay, from the student's perspective, if they attempt this and it totally goes sideways, there will be no impact. They can either redo it or they can recover with no impact. So that would be a critical impact rating of 1. It's not that impactful, actually. Number 5 would be, okay, if they attempt this and they don't get this concept, then it's going to delay their progress, or they might become stuck, or they might become confused in the process. So that would be a critical impact rating of 5. So like, that's pretty important for them to know in order to be able to do this thing. And a critical impact rating of 10 is like, okay, if they try this and they don't get this concept, then it's going to be a catastrophic impact either to themselves or their clients or to their reputation. So when I'm creating a course and I've got all this information, I put it all on post-it notes, I put it all on my wall, and I'm like, okay, this is everything that I could be sharing with them. And then I assign the critical impact. And if anything is under 5, if really they can recover without understanding this concept, then I edit that out. So the only content that goes in my course is critical impact ratings of 5 to 10. So the third thing is moments of need. So you have to think about, what are your students' helplines? So if they're going through your course, you're creating it thinking, well, I've just told you, so you should be able to do this perfectly. But then there's these five moments of need in learning. So the first one would be, I'm learning something new. The second one would be, I'm learning something more. So that's like the beginning of a process. Those two moments of need are really classroom learning. Basically, things that are going to be more than 20 minutes. They're learning something new or they're learning something more. So you can go longer. You can have more reading. You can have longer videos, or you can have live events, those kinds of things. So you have to really consider, is your course, like, is this completely new for people, or is this adding on to something? Because I think a lot of people can get very content heavy when really most of us are in the other moments of need. The third moment of need would be the moment of apply. So it's like, okay, you've given me a concept. I've done a little bit of classroom learning with you. I've read your workbook or whatever it is, but now I actually want to take this out into my world. And the moment of apply is like, oh shit, how do I do this? So it's like, yeah. You know, so that would be, you have to think about, well, what helpline do they have in the moment of need? In the moment of need, at the moment of apply, they're not going to have an hour to go back through my YouTube video. They're not going to have time or the desire to go back through my big, huge workbook. So the moment of apply is like checklists or a 2-minute video or a flow chart or a recipe, or it's like something they could access and they have like 10 minutes to go over the content. So when I have something that's a higher critical impact rating, I'm making sure that I have a resource for them at the moment of apply. Because if it's a higher critical impact and they've really got to get this right in order to succeed and have a good experience with the learning, I need to have more of a helpline for them. And this is about how much time they have. The fourth moment of need is the moment of solving. So it's like, I did what you told me to do, but it didn't work. So that's when you have shorter helplines, like troubleshooting or like a quick step-by-step video, or maybe documentation or a resource list or some alternatives and substitutions. So these would be resources that they could consume in like, you know, less than 15 minutes. So again, if it's a really high critical impact, if they really need to understand this concept, I'm going to have more resources assigned to that concept. And then the last one is the moment of change. So it's like, okay, well, I got your learning, but now the circumstance is totally different. I'm working with a totally different client style, or it's kind of like I got the part, but it wasn't the right size. So that's when it's like they might need customer service, or again, substitutes and alternatives, or they might need to have like a principles and techniques kind of list of like, okay, if you're going to have to go and figure this out for yourself, here are the principles that you want to keep in mind when you're creating your workaround. So those kinds of resources have to be short, because I'm accessing that person when they're already frustrated.
Yeah.
And so it's a great way to kind of understand like, okay, should I be making a video for that? Is that a podcast? Podcast is really learn something new or learn something more. That's not really moment of apply. So that's more classroom learning. So I don't really want to have a ton of classroom learning if I'm hoping to achieve a certain kind of result. I have to move them along the process into the actual doing. So I found that it's a really great way for me to organize the information, edit down my content into like what's actually critical, and then create more helpline resources in more appropriate ways for those more critical moments of solving and applying and changing.
Yeah. So I can tell that you had that great conversation with an adult learning specialist, because you just completely broke it down and I love it. I just, I love everything. So, you know, there are a lot of people don't think about the categories of learning. You know, sometimes we think of learning as just like this single entity or thing that happens, and we don't process and analyze how it happens. So I love that, because you're absolutely right. There's the knowledge, the information gathering, and then courses are about action. They're about outcomes. So you have to guide your learners to doing something and giving them the resources that they need to do that. And then, you know, there's ideally and a change or a desired change that happens with that. So thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's going to be very helpful.
You're welcome. And I also want to say you had a great blog post about kind of critiquing learning styles. And you were saying it's more like learning mode, right? So we're yeah. familiar with, are you auditory, visual, or kinesthetic? And I used to have that in my work too. And I also moved away from it partly because of my theories of intuition. But so this is where my soul is infused, even in the creation of courses, is I'm always taking into consideration like, okay, so the way I just described it to you, it's really highlighting the way that somebody with strong mental intuition would move through this process. So mental intuition is like intuiting logic. People who intuit logic very rarely talk about intuition because they're like engineers, right? So yeah. they don't talk about it that way. But so then when I'm thinking about, well, what are the helplines in these different moments that are going to help somebody who's a physical intuitive, somebody who needs to have like a tactile action, or they need to get embodied, they need to know how it feels in their body. So like, what exercise can I create for them? And then the emotional intuitives who do better with relating to people or anecdotes or stories, like where can I fit that into like a good prompt question for them in the discussion? And then people who are spiritual intuitives who are like, we're more woo-woo, right? And we can kind of smell our own. We have to like, we need to know that we're safe in this kind of space, or at least comfortable. And so what can I do for them to give them that experience of connection with oneness and that sort of thing? If I'm only giving them kind of a mental download, they're not going to experience it as well. So for them, I'm doing like guided visualization. They, you know, they do really well with meditation, that sort of thing. So I'm giving them a really felt experience, and I'm not dictating it so much. I'm giving them lots of space to be creative and spontaneous and let something come from them. I'm just prompting them. So when I'm thinking about those helplines, I'm thinking about that too. Whereas I think most people probably go through learning styles and don't really bring in the soulful or creative or intuitive part of it.
First, thank you for mentioning that. When I hadn't know when I wrote that, I was like, is this completely just off the wall? So it's good to hear. I just had this gut feeling, you know, it just didn't work for me. And I was trained with learning styles because I'm an instructional designer by trade.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. And so talking to you has made me think about, I've never thought about the intuitive emotional side of learning. And I think that it's all coming together because I think that that post that I wrote was a bridge, so to speak, from just getting into the logical, which is where that whole learning styles theory comes from. And then bridging and recognizing that, okay, there are modes of learning. And then there's this other dimension that we have to take into account as well. And if we're really looking holistically at our learners, then we acknowledge all of those aspects.
Exactly.
So thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, it's great to talk about this kind of thing.
It is. I geek out on it. So it's nice, it's nice to talk to someone else who does. Okay, yeah. So we talked about the True Prosperity Program, and it's about forming, letting go of money trauma, or recognizing the trauma and forming a positive relationship with money. First question, why is that so key to transformation?
Well, as I said, money is just a symbol, right? It stands in for what you think it is. So for some people, money is freedom. For other people, it's security. Other people, it's control. Other people, it's charity, generosity. It's change making, all of those things. So no matter where you're feeling stuck in your life, it's going to show up somehow in your relationship with money. So it's like, when we become more sensitive and attuned to the metaphor of our life, we can see money for the symbol that it is and unpack the story and the mythology we have around money so that we can eliminate the things that are causing unnecessary, irrational, or at least out of scale fear. In so doing, we can actually free ourselves to feel more freedom, security, creativity, no matter how much money we have. So I'm not saying, now here's one thing I want to say. If you are somebody who has the cards stacked against you, you know, you are experiencing systemic, well, racism is systemic. So, you know, but the systemic issues of poverty, prejudice, sexism, abuse, whatever it is, just trying to think nice about money isn't going to change your situation.
Yeah.
But what I know from having gone through bankruptcy is it took a tremendous amount of my physical, emotional, mental, and of course, spiritual resources just to get out of bed every day. It was so exhausting to be in that place of fear and shame and failure. So even though there might have been assistance there I could have accessed, I honestly didn't have like the brain glucose available to me to be able to see opportunity or see assistance or really be able to receive it. I was very much in, I'm not worth that. I'm ashamed of being helped right now, that sort of thing. So I had an extreme example, but I see so many of us are not moving forward in different areas of our lives because we have a tremendous amount of energy bound up in the fear or the shame or the guilt or whatever it is. When we can loosen that up and say, okay, what is actually wisdom that I've gleaned and what is actually me living in the past? When we can parse that out and release the past, the same resources that were there before are somehow more readily available. It's like having, you know, nutrient availability in our body, right? We can't metabolize unless those things are bioavailable. And so you will then be able to take advantage of, to receive, to work with the resources that you do have to create more prosperity in your life. So that's why it's called true prosperity, because for some people, they're really clear, I want to hit six figures this year. But what I'm saying is, well, six figures is a symbolic placeholder for how you want to feel, for the relationships you want to have, for the impact you want to have. So let's get super clear on that. And in so doing, you will be more able to take advantage of the things that will give you that experience. And you have more energy now available because you're not so singularly focused on money as the solution. And quite frankly, if money is the solution, that's not really a real problem. I have to be honest with you because it's not the money. It's what it is to you. Is that freedom? Is that upward mobility out of poverty? What is it for you that money solves? That's what we really need to get to. And you might consciously think you know, but what we know is that the brain only uses about, well, we used to say 5 to 10%. That was the rule of thumb. 5 to 10% of your brain capacity is going toward cognitive functioning. But now, recent science is that it's closer to 1%. Of our brain is dedicated to what we consciously know. And there's even one study that says it's more like 0.0001% of our brain is for that. Everything else is subconscious, but we in our culture have elevated consciousness to a place of primacy. And even the language of it, subconscious, it's beneath, it's less valuable, it's not as important. But hey, it's 99% of your functioning in the world. So if you don't have an intimate relationship with your subconscious, which is the gateway to your soul, if you aren't fluent in the language that your soul is using to speak to you through symbols, like for instance, money, then you will be certainly delayed, if not retarded, in your capacity to move forward.
This is a topic that's very close to my heart. I just want to say to anyone listening that if you are dealing with generational trauma with regards to money, that you can break the cycle. And, you know, this is something was completely a moment on the Zen Courses show because I've never shared my money story of, you know, growing up. I grew up in a middle-class home, but my parents were completely on a different page with money and didn't communicate about it and all of that. And for me, growing up and internalizing that, and also, you know, some of, and they were on that because of the trauma that they had had growing up. You know, my grandparents grew up in the Great Depression. And so they, my parents didn't have much, and they didn't know how to communicate about money. And so for me, coming out of that and internalizing some of the money issues from generations back, that was my challenge of being able to break out of that. And so I just want to let people know that you can do it, and it does require attention and giving yourself permission to release those shackles, so to speak.
Absolutely. And again, that's why, you know, so I started off as an intuitive, and I worked and developed my skill, and then got into hypnotherapy because I just realized that that's where the real change happens. It isn't people coming to see me tell them their story. They need to have the felt sense of where they carry it in their body, or the memories that they're not focusing on. You know, their subconscious knows the origin and the resolution to every stuck point they have. And so in the course, the first week I'm setting up, okay, this is the habit. These are the habits we're going to do over this month. It's not about budgeting or anything like that. It's very much kind of like spiritual accounting. We kind of have a journal. But in the second week, we focus on forgiveness.
Yes.
Self-forgiveness, as well as forgiveness of others, and gratitude, and actually developing a greater felt sense of gratitude in our body, and just being able to see opportunities to be in the energy of that gratitude. And then in the third week, we do the mental level. And boy, do we go back through our beliefs. Like, we go through every decade of our life. Like, when I was a kid, my mom thought money was, my dad thought money was, I thought money was, this is what I wanted it for. And then we do, okay. And so now from 15 to 20 years old, this is what I earned money for, this is what I received money for. And we go back through this very relaxed sort of journaling. I always do a little meditation beforehand. So you're not just kind of doing mental inventory. You're already in that relaxed, focused state of concentration. That's a light trance. And boy, do people come up with stuff that they just never thought of before, of like, wow, my dad had this one way of being with money, and my mom had this other way, and I've rebelled against this, and I've embraced that totally unconsciously, right? Or we might consciously have a sense, but we don't know the depth of its influence on our emotions and our decisions, that sort of thing. And then in the last week, we do that connection with, like, what is the greater purpose of you being in flow with flow? Like, what is the higher truth that you want to be embracing around what money is to you? What are you going to be ready to release now? What are you moving forward in? And what are the either the principles or the energies that are going to guide you? So we do it in a month because it's quite intense, and you need that to have a really deep change, right? But I completely agree with you that the science tells us too, that things like trauma are epigenetic. So you can bring money trauma into that. You can bring, you know, racism, even racism can be epigenetic. I mean, it's not an excuse, but what I'm saying is that it's deep and it's irrational and not conscious. So it doesn't matter how much you argue with yourself. If your conscious mind was enough to fix this, you'd have licked it by now, because you've been thinking about it for a long time, right? You need to have a deeper emotional, more almost a resting emotional experience of your own.
Yes, and absolutely. And you can get through it. And I want people to definitely connect with you and with whatever resources they need, because you can get through it. And okay.
Absolutely. Can I actually say, because you're right, I tend to not talk about the financial result of this, but not only can people get through, this is the stuff I did to get over my bankruptcy. And so I went from being totally ashamed and feeling like I was just gum on the bottom of society's shoe to I'm the breadwinner. So my husband works in what we call the home economy with our garden. And, you know, we grow most of our food and all that kind of stuff. I take 17 weeks off a year. I'm very close to earning six figures this year. I only work 4 days a week. You know, like I make a podcast just for fun. So the thing that changed for me when I started to have 10-figure months was I wasn't even noticing that it was happening. Like I had three 10-figure months in a row before I realized it because I wasn't clinging to money. I wasn't even that aware of it because I was just in that flow where I was free from anxiety. So I didn't have a white knuckle grip on my mouse going to my bank account, you know, the last few days of the month anymore. I just had this profound sense of trust, and I was deeply driven by these higher principles that I'd embraced. And so it actually totally works. This is why I'm saying it's my best work ever. It's like you can get over it and it can be freaking awesome.
Yeah. And it's so key. It is so key. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for sharing all of that, Carmen. We're down to the final three questions. So the first one, what's next for you? Anything exciting coming up that you want to share?
Well, I do think I'm going to move the Numina School over to Teachery. And so I'm going to relaunch that in January. So yeah, if people go to my website, carmenspaniola.com, at the very bottom, there's a little footer where I say, hey, I'll give you updates about my podcast, the Numinous podcast. But actually, you know, a couple times a year, I'll send out like, hey, I have a course. So when I relaunch the Numinous School, I'm super excited about that because I just think the Teachery platform is quite slick. It's a really nice design and the opportunities to share in the comments and everything is really good. So I'm revisiting that content and refreshing it, and making it even better. So that's a big project. Yeah. I'm excited about that.
Very cool. So you told people how to reach you, carmenspaniola.com. How can they find out or go to the True Prosperity Program?
Actually, if you go to carmenspaniola.com right now, you'll find links through it. But if you just go to carmenspaniola.com, you'll enter my world. and I would just say inhabit that for a while. You'll see my courses. And at the very bottom at the footer, there's resources. And there's like tons of like my meditations and my writing and all that kind of stuff. So I just say inhabit the world and sign up for the newsletter and you'll know all the cool stuff that's happening.
Yeah, and we'll be sure to get the links in the show notes as well. Okay.
Great.
Last question that I ask each guest, what is your why? Why do you get up and do this work every day?
Well, because I don't work for me, I work for spirit. So, gosh, spirit is quite a taskmaster. And when I am not going where I'm guided, I am swiftly and often severely corrected. So yeah, I mean, if I wasn't doing this, I would be failing my soul. And we have such a high trust, my soul and me, that that's really my why. My husband knows it. He knows that he's second fiddle to spirit thing. It's hard for me to even conceptualize it. It just isn't a question I would ever ask. I feel impelled or compelled to go where spirit calls me.
Carmen, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, it's been fantastic for me. I never get to have meta conversations about this kind of stuff. So thank you so much for inviting me, Janelle. Thank you.
So if you couldn't already tell, I was blown away by that interview with Carmen. There were so many nuggets of wisdom there. I hope you got value out of it, and I hope it helps you with your online courses. If you want to find out more about Carmen Spaniola, check her out at her site, carmenspaniola.com. You can also check out the show notes for the links that we mentioned during the episode. Just head over to zencourses.co/017 and you'll find everything. Again, that's zencourses.co/017 for episode 17. Wow. Okay. If you want to stay up to date with the podcast and get my weekly articles about creating successful online courses, you've absolutely got to join my newsletter. The easiest way to join is to go to zencourses.co/newsletter. There's some exciting stuff coming down the pipeline that you won't want to miss. So join the Zen Courses family. You can also just go to the homepage at zencourses.co, not .com, just to remember that, and you can sign up there. Easy peasy. Finally, if you enjoyed this episode, why not leave a review? Reviews boost rankings, which help me to know whether you think I'm doing a good job or not. I really appreciate your input. In fact, I will be reading the next interview live on the show. So I'm just saying, it could be you. All right, it's that time. Thanks for hanging out with me. I am Janelle Allen, and this has been the Zen Courses Show. Have a wonderful day.